Welcome to the Mad Trio Podcast. This week we have the California Pariah, Jonathan Charney, James the Fat Man Stevens, and Ryan Don't Ask, Don't Tell Preston.
Giggity.
And one of the saddest or most interesting, depending on which way you look at it, things happen today is the Cathedral of Notre Dame almost burned to the ground this week. Last time I heard it was because of some sort of electrical issue.
Yeah, well, that's what happens when you use electricity from the 1300s.
Oh, shit.
It just wasn't insulated like modern day wires. One of the things I thought was interesting was how much wood is actually supporting the structure. I was reading and I heard this saying there was a lot of wood that was actually supporting the lead roof.
Well, there was there construction going on before? Like, was there some kind of restoration project? Because it looked like the whole front of it was completely filled with scaffolding.
So
I didn't realize the roof was wood either. When they said Notre Dame was on fire, and you were just kind of scrolling through YouTube and saw Notre Dame on fire, I'm like, fuck. Started watching, and I'm like, the whole roof's on fire. I didn't realize that was all wood.
So the it was under renovations, currently undergoing $6.8 million worth of renovations.
Or was. Now it's going to be going more.
Well, yeah, I wonder how much they had the renovations insured for, because that's a huge freaking...
So, and the way I understand the structure of this, of Notre Dame, was the fact that it has like an inner shell and an outer shell on the roof. And in between the two was where all the wood supports were. And apparently most of those, by what I heard, and this is kind of a guess, most of them were actually original timbers. And unlike like modern construction, where there's fire breaks, there's blocking, there's a lot of stuff to actually stop the fire from going up the structure, I heard a quote that it was basically like a forest up there with how many beams were actually supporting.
That does not surprise me.
And one of the more interesting things to me is what they're going to do, because you can't find old growth wood, which, by the way, I think this ended construction was like 1260 something.
They started construction, I think, in like maybe like the late 1100s. It took them almost 300 years to build the fucking thing.
Yeah. So according to Wikipedia, years built was 1163 through 1345. So between those periods was actually true old growth wood. I'm assuming England, I know, was having hard time getting woods during, I think, the 1600s. I guess it's an island. So I was amazed. I was actually really heartbroken. It's an absolutely gorgeous building.
It has been, yeah.
Oh, my God, yeah. I love that. The French Gothic style, I'm a fan of Gothic churches anyway. That's obviously probably the most famous of them all.
It's apparently...
But, the outcrying of support for this has been insane. I mean, like, the whole world has basically said, like, that's kind of fucked up. Here's some money.
Yeah. The most interesting thing out of all of this, besides the fact it's France's most visited thing, tourist trap ever, with 30,000 a day apparently visiting it.
Wow.
So according to the news reports I recently heard, guess what video games might be able to help this be rebuilt?
Assassin's Creed.
Bing, 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 bing. That shocked me, which it shouldn't be because it's in Assassin's Creed, but... I thought that was really cool. I am kind of curious what they're going to do for some of the supports on the roof. My honest guess is they're going to be using engineered wood products, EWP being actually stronger, plus the fact you can't find timber. I don't see them using structural steel. I could be wrong, but what
I don't think they would use steel. I think they would try to restore it as much as possible.
Well, one of the benefits of steel is the fact it requires a high melting temperature. The one negative side about it is the fact that how much it actually weighs. So if they actually did do it, they'd have to figure out how to actually transfer the load down to the bearing walls. That's why I think they'd end up doing engineered wood, which is multitude stronger than any solid solid wood you'll actually find.
Yeah.
But I was kind of heartbroken, because I think, if I remember correctly, I've been there, and it's just gorgeous. There's that, what do you call it? It's that really fancy stained glass window. You can see it from the front.
Oh, yeah.
The rose window in the front.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's iconic, yeah.
That's gorgeous.
Yeah. It,
yeah. My, my coworker was, I was telling him, like, dude, Notre Dame's on fire right now. He's like, so I'm like, what? I'm like, how do you not understand? Like how fucked up that is. Well, he's like, it's a building. I look, I don't care about shit. I'm like, dude, what if Wrigley Field was on fire? He's like, I could never pay it.
So for me, like when I heard Notre Dame was burning and I'm like, you know, I hope it's the college. That's literally the first thought through my head is,
yeah, the Notre Dame actually had to tweet, like, hey, by the way, it's not us.
Damn.
So while undergoing renovations and restoration, the roof of Notre Dame caught fire on the evening of 15th of April, 2018, burning for around 15 hours. The cathedral sustained serious damage, including destruction of the timber spire over the crossing and most of the lead-covered wooden roof and the stone vaulted ceiling. Some of this I don't think is ever going to be able to replace. Like, if you take a look at all the detail, I'm showing James.
Yeah. I mean, the only good thing about them deciding to basically fix it all is they do have a shit ton of pictures of all the architecture and art that they have that they can work with. The thing is that, you know, no matter how they do it, they're never going to get the age on it properly.
Well, they're never going to get the...
Well, luckily, most of it is stonework. Yeah. You know, it's obviously really hard to burn. You know what I mean?
It can still crack.
You can definitely weaken concrete, by fire and whatnot. So hopefully a lot of that that amazing, you know, like masonry work. I mean, all those... All the little carvings on the arches
My only question of that, and I'm going to call it filigree because I don't actually know the term for it, but all that, like the filigree, the little work, intricate detail. The question is, if any portion of it was damaged, are there people around today that have the ability to actually
recreate it?
I'm sure there is to some degree.
Yeah, absolutely.
I guarantee. Because a master stonemason can do practically anything.
And president? I don't actually know what you call the actual leader.
President of France.
I don't think it's president. I think they do the prime minister. But this is I don't actually know. The prime minister /or president promised that it's going to take 5 years. The actual people who run it, it's not, I think it's a Roman Catholic church. The building's actually owned by France itself, said it's going to be closed for 6 years.
Wow.
All the surrounding, businesses are pissed because they're missing 30,000 visitors a day.
Well, people will still go visit it even though it's under construction. It's not the first time some shit's gone down. I don't even think it's the first fire that's happened there. But they've done a few restoration projects over the years, you know, to kind of bring it back to life. So
I'm trying to read Wikipedia
I think
real
people
quick.
Will still go. I mean, fuck, if anything, you know, there's a lot of people going right now just to see how bad the damage was.
That's true. And I still think depending once they actually find if the building's actually structurally sound, which I think is the number one thing. And I think that's going to take a while. I mean, once they find it structurally sound, I think they're going to be able to do some sort of visitors, even if it's just have people go in, like, say, the first little area, so you can go in and see it. I think they're going to be able to do something. On the other hand...
Yeah, they'll definitely figure it out.
Do they...
It'll take a while, but it'll still stand.
Is there... I didn't check, but is there even an estimated cost that this is going to take? Because it's got to be...
$500 million probably.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
I think they got $1 billion in donations.
Oh shit!
I think they did get some completely ridiculous amount of money. I mean, almost overnight. Like I said, everybody was like, "Hey, France, that kind of sucks."
Yeah, here's $500 million.
Yeah, I mean, I swear there was like some billionaire that donated like $300 million.
Oh, shit.
Now here's
two. I don't know how serious he was.
But now, I want to know. I mean, the building has to be insured for a ridiculous amount, and even the crew that was doing the renovations that possibly caused the fire, they have to ensure their work and the fact that this could have happened.
So
there's a high insurance cost that, I mean, this company, whoever was working on it, is bankrupt. I guarantee
it. So I heard on the radio.
Can you imagine how bad you fucking feel if you just happen to.
So I heard
they haven't lynched these guys.
I heard on the radio.
Yeah.
I heard on the radio the other day, they're actually called like the cathedral restorers. Like that's actually what they did apparently for a business. So I doubt they're going to survive.
Anymore.
So the eventual reconstruction of the Notre Dame is now a foregone conclusion. Within hours of the fire, destroyed much of the cathedral on Monday night. Donors pledged more than $1 billion to restore the Parisian icon to its former glory. Now, a couple of questions. And maybe this is because the fact I'm a jaded American. Here's my question. How much of that money is actually going to go to the cathedral, and how much is going to go to pay the vig?
I think they should pay me.
So what do you think? What? I mean, do you think it's actually...
Yeah, this is a nice building. It'd be a shame if something happened to it.
Exactly. Well, that's kind of what I'm curious if it's actually going to get there, because if it actually did it to actually went to $1 billion, I doubt it's going to take that much to do it. I bet it'll take $500 million or more.
Yeah, that's what Ryan said off the bat is $500 million. And that's where I was thinking. I was thinking $400-500 million that would need to be done for that. I don't know what they're going to do with the other $500 million, though.
There's a couple of things that I don't know. And if anybody actually listens to this who's in France, hi, if that's the case.
I mean, AKP.
My question is what exactly, because I'm assuming, especially because of the fact it's more socialist than America, would it actually require the $1 billion to get past all the regulation and all the requirements, or is this something that you think they would speed through the system in order to get it restored?
I hope that they speed through the system, but... As you said, they're still a socialist nation, so they probably will turn some of that, tax some of that money and
put
it towards whatever funds they have lying around. So,
well, a couple of things. One being the fact it's a state,
church, but
a state being the state of France. It's a state-owned building as a historical artifact and monument. Would they still be taxed because it's state-owned? And the other fact, it's actually run by the Roman Catholic Church.
Oh, God.
So I'm curious, because I don't see if it is state-owned, I don't see them taxing something that draws so many people around the world to see a building.
Well, I don't think they would need to.
No, I don't think so either, especially not with all the money. I just hope it gets rebuilt. I'll probably never see it again. But I hope they don't speed through it. I mean, if it takes 20 years, I mean, it took 300 plus years to build. Let it take 20 years to fix.
Yeah, that's the thing. They've definitely, done some lengthy restoration shit in the past. And apparently we're in the middle of one at the moment, so.
They definitely are now.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like the freeways up here. It's just been postponed for a decade.
I don't know. I thought it really sucked. I mean, it's just like, it's almost like them losing the Eiffel Tower or losing one of the monuments in DC. I mean, it's such a big deal.
Yeah. Most of it's still there, the roof and that big spire are fucking gone, but,
it's
making it structurally sound is going to be the main portion of it. I don't know if they're going to have to do, a whole lot of restoration to the original stonework and all that.
So,
although I haven't seen the interior photos.
So my guess, what they're going to have to do, excuse me. I don't know how hot it was. It wasn't hot enough to melt gold because that cross was still there. So one of the issues they're going to have, they're going to have to see if the structure can actually still support itself. How much is it weakened? Heat can weaken stone. So what they're going to have to do is figure out if the foundation can actually do it. Because there are ways to restore it, but if the foundation is actually broken or damaged, they're going to have to reinforce it, which can take even more time. And which is also including creating structures to help take the load off while they repair the load-bearing members. It'll definitely take a while. I am curious, though, what you guys think. When you think of France, there's a handful of things that usually people think of. It's Notre Dame,
the Louvre,
the Louvre. It's the Eiffel Tower. It's Notre Dame. Yeah. So, what exactly are there anything like to you guys that when you say like America, that would be like an American icon to that level? Granted, all of the stuff we named are incredibly old.
Yeah, pretty much the the Washington D.C. monument.
But here's my thought: like, if you were some guy from literally from the middle of Egypt or Europe, who was said America, is there any monuments that you would actually think of? Like, because how many people
I'm not from the Egypt, am I?
Well, no.
Yeah,
you know somebody, but I mean, what you
think? And if I was, I'd probably go visit Cairo, Indiana.
So what do you think, though? What do you think would be, if you could think outside the fact you're Americans, what do you think would be the American icon? It's definitely the White House.
Yeah, White House, Washington Monument, Lincoln Monument, Statue of Liberty.
Yeah, I'll say the White House and Statue of Liberty. That's a good point.
Hoover Dam, I guess. Rushmore. You know, is this goddamn?
The Hoover Dam, you always hear the wrong rumors about there's people buried in it.
Well, I'm just saying, you know, if it was to be gone. So, I mean, if the Hoover Dam went, I mean, Vegas is gone. So, you know.
Everything downstream is getting washed away.
Yeah, which so
is
I'm good just saying, like, states. If something structurally or if something bad happened to it that you would be like, oh, that really sucks.
I got to say, though.
I would say the Hoover Dam going, I mean, would have catastrophic consequences on surrounding cities.
Yeah, but I don't think there's anything.
So you can be like, oh, that sucks. There goes Vegas and the Hoover Dam.
I don't think there's anything to that level of Notre Dame, though. Like, that is that awe-inspiring? I mean, granted, it's probably because we're such a young country, but I don't think there's anything that.
Right, yeah, we don't have anything that old at all.
I mean, we used to have, you know, the Washington, D.C., but that burned down long, long ass time ago. So, I mean, even that isn't, you know, I mean, even if it was still around, what would it be like? Maybe 200 years old if it was the first Washington, you know?
Well, the White House has been gutted.
The White House, you know, that's what I meant. Like,
the White House has been gutted. Has burned. I think it's been burned down once and it's been completely gutted at least an additional time that I remember.
Yeah, War of 1812, they burned it down.
Yeah, so I'm just saying, like, we really don't have anything that, even if it was still around, would be pushing 300 years.
Yeah,
we don't have anything that took anywhere near that long to complete a construction.
Oh, yeah. You know? What about that level of awe-inspiring? You know, like something that you could.
Well,
that you would look at and go, this is amazing. You know, granted, minus the sans the factor of this took around 300 years to make, and this was, you know, man's God, monument to God, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Like I said, the House on the Rock in Wisconsin.
Yeah, there's really nothing that would really impact anybody else besides our own country.
So
that's about it.
What about non-man-made? Like seeing the plains, for example. If you go to, like, Wyoming, Montana, you know, just seeing, or Arizona, seeing all these amazing landscapes, the Painted Desert, for example, which is beautiful, by the way. Or
the Rockies?
Rockies would be cool.
I mean, yeah, but...
Yeah, the Utah, Swat Canyon.
Yeah, I mean, there's... Oh, yeah, there's really... I mean, as you said, like the landscapes, there's certain landscapes around and in different areas that would be great to view, but I mean, nothing like awe inspiring, you know, I mean.
And I would say part of our early history, because America was such a fast growing country and most of the stuff that I think that would be that awe inspiring never survived it. If there was anything, just because nothing was designed to last.
Yeah, the oldest shit we got's probably Philadelphia. You know what I mean? As far as any kind of old buildings,
I got the old North Church in Boston would be pretty badass to see.
Yeah, the old North Church in Boston. But yeah, that's about it. I mean, kind of there's nothing really from the early frontier days. I mean, you might have like Sutter Mill, some shit like that from the beginning of the Gold Rush, but
That's not really awe-inspiring. I mean, it's actually a lot smaller than you think.
Considering...
No, yeah, no. I mean, but it's just like, oh, here's where history started, kind of. I mean, but that's about it.
And the actual mill isn't on the spot that Sutter actually found gold. It's like 500-600 feet away from where he actually
found
it. I mean, it's a big spot. I mean, it's a couple football field lengths away from the actual mill, and I mean...
And I think that the only thing I could think of is the fact that the most amazing thing about American history, sans the fact there's not a lot of examples of most of it, is how people lived. And basically, the way it says, if you take a look at the East Coast, that was really civilized in comparison to the Wild West, yeah, which was an incredibly dirty, very hard living existence.
Hey, speaking of very dirty, hard living existence, you hear they're making a Deadwood movie?
Huh. Is it based off of the TV show or something different?
It's, of course, based off the fucking TV show. They're actually doing it in lieu of the fifth or sixth season, whatever it would have been.
But, I mean,
no, it's been the fourth.
I want to miss Powers Booth in that show.
So is this going to be a wrap?
I know, me too. Well, it's taking place 10 years after the last season.
Okay.
So they're going to be skipping a lot of shit that they would have otherwise gotten into. They have to explain why the character is not old.
Yeah.
I did hear, I listened to an interview with a guy who was a Wild West historian and said Deadwood, I could be wrong with this, but I thought they said Deadwood was pretty accurate in some of the characters. What was it? The saloon owner who beat up all the hookers and all that. Apparently that guy was a real,
was a real guy.
Yeah.
Man, did I love his fucking character so much, dude. Ian McShane, man.
Yeah.
Hey, are you guys watching the American Gods at all?
My computer's been down, so I haven't been able to really get into it recently, but, yeah, I want to catch up on that. But I was going to say, so one of the cool things that they used to do at Sutter's Mill, and maybe John would remember this. So you know those high-powered pressure water guns that they would use to bring down sides of the mountain and wash it into a sluice box? I'm sure you've seen movies where they have that, Ryan, right?
The high-pressure what now?
There's a high-pressured water cannon that they would shoot into the side of a mountain, and it would just basically erode the mountain, and then all the...
Oh.
Material would wash down into a sluice box. So
yeah, sluice cannon.
Yeah, so they have those at Sutter's Mill.
Hydraulic mining.
And when I was a kid, you know, junior high age, they actually would let you spray some of the water out in like kind of a little basin area that they had. They still have the cannons up last time I was there, but they don't do the high-powered water portion of it anymore. So you can basically just
In the day was just run it from a really high space and then put it down into successively smaller, you know, tubes and flanges and whatnot. And by the time it gets to the bottom, that water is fucking moving.
So here's
they're pretty cool.
So a little quite
hell yeah. They hit the side of the mountain with basically gravel.
Yeah.
So
and so if you can't dig through like actual solid rock, you just fucking hit it with a ton of water.
So I have the description up on Wikipedia. It's hydraulic mining or hydrolacking.
I think that's
is a form of mining that uses high pressure jets of water to dislodge rock material or move sediment. In the placer mining of gold or tin, the result water sediment slurry is directed through sluice boxes to remove gold. It is also used in mining of kaolin and coal. Am I saying that right? K-O.
Doesn't sound familiar to me.
I don't know. A lot of that is now illegal now just because of much material it blows away. I keep thinking...
Yeah, the old fucking mining processes were pretty interesting back in the day. I mean, that sort of necessity ingenuity, you know, it's like, hey, I've got to get this from here to here. I need to be clever.
Yeah, the part that amazed me was the fact they used quicksilver or mercury.
Oh yeah,
in the removal of gold, and how the fact that if you guys haven't actually heard any of this, we actually live in gold country. And
yeah,
how
if you
much
haven't figured that part out by now?
How much mercury is actually in the sediment and ground is pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been to Sutter Mill, actually, with James and you. Were you there?
I don't remember.
I don't think he was.
Sutter,
I don't think he was either.
By the way, Sutter's fort is amazing because all the doorways are 4'9", and if you're not careful, you'll knock yourself out. Ask me how I know this.
No, I'm not going to fall into that trap.
He knows this because he's 6'2", if you're wondering out there.
6'2", I'm taller than that.
Are you?
Yeah. Yes, I am. I wish I was 6'3", shorter.
6'4"?
6'5".
6'5"? Are you really 6'5"? Fuck, I don't remember you being that tall.
Yeah. Yeah, at his wedding, I was the, I was the shortest guy on John's side.
Well, you're 4'9/6'1".
Oh, yeah, I guess you could go with that. Well, yeah. I mean, but I'm about 6'5", 11" now.
I mean, last time I saw Ryan, he looked like a short, skinny, starving Undertaker. Now he looks like Paul Bearer. So
he's really fascinated with this one, Ryan, if you haven't told.
I just think
Jerry loves imagining that I weigh 400 pounds now.
Hey, it makes me pop, so that's all that matters. The fact it makes me laugh. At the end of it, as long as I laugh, that's all good.
Oh, it makes going downhill easier. You just roll on your side and you go down right away.
So to kind of,
I've hit the gym like 6 times now, which basically makes me better than most people.
The gym?
What?
The gym. Homer.
What?
The Simpsons episode where he was eating the stupid power bar things.
Oh.
That were mostly made out of Chinese newspaper.
This is great. This is great dead air, by the way.
What?
And I think the only one of the reasons I think people would come to the United States is the fact if they're history fans. I mean, there's a lot of amazing things to see in New York, Los Angeles, and other Philadelphia, but I think if you're history fans, especially of short-term fast history, because in the scheme of things, United States moved pretty fast. I mean, fully formed country in like 300 plus years is pretty fast in rising from being, you know, a new country, a found continent, I'm using my air quotes, to the greatest superpower known to man at the time. I mean, that's pretty quick.
Well, we had the advantage of basically bringing over all the cool shit, you know, to a place that had no reason whatsoever to get beyond, you know, tribes. You know, versus the, you know, the European countries were rubbing up against all the other settled societies. So it was, you know, there's this big need to be better than the country next to you or than Asia that might be coming up and all these different things.
It was,
around here. We didn't have that. So when the Europeans got here, they kind of hit the ground running with not a lot of competition.
Well, it's the very cliched, a statement of, you know, you can become whoever you want. You weren't, like if you're in India, there's the caste system. If you're in Europe, it's something similar, especially back then. And here, as long as you work hard, lie, cheat, or steal, back in the day, you could pretty much make your fortune.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And back then, it was...
Yeah, as long as you were sexually repressed enough to want to leave the old country, you know, you came here all Puritan status, and then, yeah, you can do whatever you want.
I have to admit, I love going
Salem,
to church.
Massachusetts, a really good example.
I love going to church, but those eight-hour church services the Puritans had, you know, you couldn't have any fun at church. I could not do. My church is like 45 minutes, and I'm thinking, damn, is this over with yet? Which is funny because my church service as a kid were like 3.5 hours. And I was thinking, you know, I was like, oh, this is fine. Thanks, YouTube. But some of my favorite segments of history, though, I love World War II history, but the Wild West history is also fascinating to me. Because
the frontier history / getting into like the Wild West shit. But I mean, just the old frontier days, you know, the, you know, 1400s, 1500s. Was crazy. I mean, you know, back when it was all fur trappers and frontier land.
I like that show Frontier, actually. That's a really good show.
I think one of the more interesting things to me is if you take a look at like the Native American culture, like how they dressed and what they did, a lot of the mountain men adopted, at least on the periphery, like their clothes, like the leather clothed with the little frill fringe on it actually had a reason for existing. I heard it actually helps wick clothing, to the tomahawk being actually a really good, very nimble weapon slash tool. That always amazed me how much people actually took from their culture and realized, hey, these aren't quote unquote savages. These people actually have a really good, because back then that's what anybody who was not white was, really. If you look at the Trail of Tears,
recognize these people as like, hey, you've been surviving on this land for X amount of years. You probably know a thing or two about doing that. So, a lot of the shit back in the day was function. And what moved the fur trapping was basically like European fashion. You know, we had to have somebody to sell the shit to.
Exactly. And then you go to like the Wild West when you have people like Wild Bill Hickok, John Wesley Harding, who John Wesley Harding apparently was so fast. There's a thing, a quote I remember. It was the sheriff of this town and John Wesley Harding were going against somebody. Somebody drew, something happened, and the sheriff made a comment, by the time I reached for my gun, John Wesley Harding's was already out and cocked. That's how fast he really was.
All I remember about Harding was so mean, he once shot a man for snoring.
Yeah, I love that.
And he has a book. Yeah. He has a book that he wrote because he went to jail, became a lawyer. I want to read it, but it's one of those things that I just don't have time. But I think it'd be interesting to read a book, basically a self-biography. I mean, it's a lot of propaganda, but I think it'd be fascinating to read. The other part I think is interesting, Wild West history, is how it's became, like if you look at true Wild West history, and then up in the 40s, 50s, 60s, when even beforehand, actually, when Wild West tales became very popular, how... not Hickok. There was a movie and it had Doc Holliday was in it. I forgot the guy's name.
Tombstone?
For some. Yes. Who's in that? Who's it? The Wild Earp, for example.
Wyatt Earp.
Apparently,
not Wild. Wyatt.
I said Wyatt. You're just not paying attention.
Wyatt Earp
was apparently a real asshole in real life. He was.
I've heard that.
I heard like well. He actually became a U.S. Marshal, chased down everybody involved in the shooting who was still alive, and shot him. I mean, basically, yeah. He was a piece of shit. And it wasn't up until, was it, I think Hugh O'Brien was actually in the Wyatt Earp TV show, where they started kind of changing him into a hero figure. Like Doc Holliday, and if you ever think the Hugh O'Brien Wyatt Earp TV show, was an old guy. I think in real life he didn't even make it to 30.
No, he didn't.
Yeah, no, he was pretty fucking young when he got tuberculosis.
Yeah.
Or the consumption, if you want to be old.
So I love Wild West history. I think it's very fascinating because people, and in a lot of ways, it was true freedom. Of course, this true freedom also came with an incredible cost. You lived hard, died young. And here's a question.
It was definitely rough fucking living.
Now, do you guys think it was stressful? And here's my thought. My thought, while the Wild West was stressful, it was a different type of stress. It was live or die, which in theory, in my opinion, if that's how you live, you get used to that. Versus now, we don't have that struggle, so everything in modern day is a stressor. Going to the grocery store, stressor. Filling up with gas, stressor. This is a stressor. That is stressor. Versus,
yeah, well, people are very adaptable, you know. So back in the day, it just is what it is. And yeah, I mean, I think that ultra idea of freedom was way more prevalent. I think the stress was in line with that kind of living, you know, so it just kind of is what it is. But, people were happy or sad just like they are today.
Well,
I think they breathed a little freer, you know, with the homesteading and all that stuff, you know, in the real early days before it became really cutthroat, you know, it was just like, hey, I'm a, you know, a man with my family or what have you. And I can go out and just claim this land and work the land
Do you think
literally make everything yourself?
Do you think people were hardier back then? Just because,
I mean, to a certain degree, I mean, you know, your obviously life expectancy was, you know, early 40s, probably.
And what
but
I
that was just because, you know, dysentery, the son of a bitch.
And when I say hardier, I'm really talking about compared to the Western world. Just because the Western world specifically has become so soft, you don't. Like, even the poorest person in the United States is richer than any of the poorest people in history. Just level of stuff and income and food and health. We're at the richest point in human history, period.
It was not exactly the classic unwashed fucking passage.
No. Well, have you gone into a Walmart lately?
but like you were saying, I mean, it's the... You know, those people in Walmart are one, not the poorest among us.
Oh, yeah.
But two, you know, still have two TVs and, you know, that kind of shit.
It's because it's on layaway.
So like that was...
rims on their car.
So a friend of mine got really pissed off at me because I said, I personally think today's life is more stressful than modern day. Because I also think it's the mindset we have, too.
Well, it's the awareness, you know what I mean? Like everyone wants everybody to have awareness of whatever tragedy they feel is the worst, you know, we need to raise awareness for whatnot and for whatnot, but we're not really designed to be aware of 7 billion people. You know, we're designed to function in a group of about 150.
I gotta say, though, if you watch the news at all and pay attention to it, I don't know how you don't put a gun barrel in your mouth, because I pay attention to local stuff, and I try to tune everything out because I got enough stuff in my life that stresses me out.
You disassociate. That becomes the problem. Is you can't feel the heartstrings tug for every part of human society, or lack thereof. I mean, it's so you have to disassociate. You have to think that, like, okay, well, this doesn't affect me. I have this has no bearing on my life in general. And that's why stories are always so important. It takes away the numbers, you know, 10,000 people died here, 20,000 died here. You can name somebody, and, you know, fiction or not, it would endear you to a life struggle. But it almost needs to be fiction, because if you start thinking about, you know, again, the 7 billion people and all the tragedy and whatnot, you'd be devastated all day long. You wouldn't get out of bed, and you'd eat a bullet.
And it's, and I also said the other thing about the news is it's very, US centric. And I know that sounds weird, but you always hear like lately, United States is all about Trump, all about this, all about that. You never hear the fact the United States still has troops all over the world, or the fact there's a massive outbreak of Ebola in Africa. And so,
you have to think of those as just,
I think you're right.
Problems like oh, there's a problem over there, and oh, isn't that sad? But you're not really thinking about it because you're not bawling your eyes out.
Isn't that sad?
I think actually what Ryan said was right. It was disassociating yourself from the reality of that.
People.
Yeah, no, I think that's perfectly fine. It's like the fact that I've known plenty of people who have had friends die, and I'm like, oh, I'm sorry to hear that, and they're bawling. But you know, I talked to the person maybe once or twice, but I think you have to, because if you don't disassociate things from modern life, I think you're going to cry. On the other hand, if you look at the way life used to be in the Wild West, death wasn't something that was theoretical. It was something that was a daily occurrence. I don't think it was...
Yeah, we've really insulated ourselves from death in this country. A lot of other countries do it too, but we do it. You know, this sort of willful ignorance of I'm not going to think about that,
which is
an amazing luxury if you think about it.
And
most people throughout history have not had the luxury to say I'm just not going to think about it.
And I wouldn't even say death on a human level, which totally we have. But I would say even like our food supply, when you can go to your local supermarket or Quick Stop and pick up ground beef, steak, whatever. I've read and I've actually heard people say, well, why do you need to kill cows? You can just get meat from the supermarket. I mean, just such weird disassociation that I think if you actually stop and think about death happens, I do think it'll help you process things better.
Yeah, I mean, well, to a certain extent. I mean, I'm a mortician for a living, and there's a real real healthy level of disassociation that I have to do day to day. You know, I can be empathetic. I can sit across from somebody and say, you know, fuck, man, that's terrible what you're going through. But if I think about it, like, oh, this person lost the person that raised them, or all these things, or really allowed myself to feel it, you know, I wouldn't be able to really get through my day.
Well,
so I have to intellectualize it and say, like, oh, this is terrible what you're going through. Hopefully there's something I can do to help out, or at least make this part easier. I can't think about their loss like that.
I would say you're part of the filthy few, being the fact that you're able to, I think it's something you're able to intellectualize, the fact that this is reality, because it is such a part of your life. And I think it's hard for me to really kind of say what I'm thinking on this, because I'm kind of thinking and talking on the fly. But I think the way you handle it, I think is the best way to do it. Even if it was,
it definitely is. And people ask me all the time, like, oh, I don't know how you can do this. Like, dude, you don't really think about it like that. You know, when I'm moving somebody around, I'm usually making jokes or shit like that, which most people would find incredibly
waving at the family with their hand and taking off.
Yeah, no, I've only ever heard of those people. I think I'd beat the shit out of the guy that did that next to me.
But you're
the one that gives them the bird from their friend.
But I think the difference,
right.
I think the difference between you, because I do know you, versus other people, is the fact you may crack a joke, because cracking dark jokes is a way for you to be able to handle what you're doing. Cops do the same thing. EMTs.
It's a coping mechanism.
But I think the fact
that it really is.
You're respectful of it. I mean, because I've heard of people who work I've heard stories from people I've met over the years who worked in hospitals, and they were just doing, you know, they were playing around with the dead bodies. They'd grab both hands and the feet and just throw them, you know, like totally disrespectful, not honoring the fact that this was a human being. And, you know, I think you have to do that. But I also think you have to realize in your end is the fact that you can't think of this as a former person, because I couldn't do your job. I'm too empathetical and I'm too emotional. I literally think I would have a hard time with that.
You'd be crying the whole time.
I probably would be, honestly. I'd be like, hold on, I need a drink.
Well, I was doing this for a long time before my second grandfather died. And I actually went and picked him up from the house that he died in and took him to the mortuary. That was really fucking difficult. I really wish I had not done that. That was the day I realized, like, oh, fuck, you need people who don't know this person, who can say, like, oh, hey, you know what? I'm sorry for your loss. We'll take it from here.
Yeah.
So did that help you process his death at all? Like, one last chance to say goodbye? Or did that actually make it worse for you? The fact that you're actually...
It would have been fine had I not done it.
But I meant, like, if you, with you doing it, did it affect you more as far as the fact that you realize that he's no longer with you? Did it actually make it worse for you? You think?
You know what? No, it was just, you know, in that moment when you would otherwise want to be grieving, I was sitting there trying to do a job. You know, I thought, like, okay, I know too many 19-year-old kids who do this kind of work, and I'd feel better, you know, knowing I was the guy who's been doing this for a while, who can take care of this. But, you know, I'm thinking, okay, I'm going to go in there. I'm going to bring in my equipment. I'm going to, you know, do my job. And, you know, it'll be a nice thing to be able to do for my own family. But it was difficult. You know what I mean? I walked in and I sat in a chair for like a half an hour before I could actually do anything.
I don't blame you at all.
I'll be honest. I'm kind of stuck between thinking that if it was me, I would do it because it would be my way of honoring him, and then telling somebody else, hey, you're fucking doing this. That would be a hard choice, because I'm all about honoring my friends and family who have passed. It's really important to me to do that on some level, but I don't think I could do that. I really don't think I could.
Yeah, I would have been just fine. You know, I've no problem, you know, like if I were to go to his funeral or something, and you know, there is a moment where it kind of hits you where you're like, oh, this person's gone. And, you know, everyone kind of reacts to those in different ways. No sort of right or wrong way to grieve and that kind of thing.
God, I still, on some level, I think I'm still grieving for Jeff, a former co-host who was in Real Flix Reviews, really wacky taste in movies. 'Cause I've got part of his collection.
Hard Candy was a good one, though.
I miss that dude a lot. For sure. I spent a lot of time with that guy drinking coffee.
Yeah, Jeff was great, man.
One of the benefits of me being unemployed for so long is I get to spend some quality time with people. Like, I miss him a lot. So for me, grieving apparently is not just, doesn't take years. It's years. Shit, I'm still trying
really,
to get
I really like Jeff a lot. I really wish I'd had a chance to go hang with him a bit. You know, we mostly ever talked on the phone. I think I met him once.
I think, James's wedding.
Yeah.
For sure. He was a real rat.
His mom is great. I love his mom. I talk to his mom occasionally. His mom is a Black Sabbath fan. And his description of his mom was she's an old school Christian. Yeah. She's an incredibly sweet lady, but I talked about one of my favorite albums is probably Sabbath, Bloody Sabbath. She's like, I had that record when I was a kid. I loved it. It's like, now I can see Jeff in you.
Yeah. I mean, she's a really cool lady.
She's awesome.
What was that? Oh.
Just family is pretty cool, even the dad.
Is there anything, excuse me real quick, my gimmick apparently is sounding like I'm dying. Is there anything in your job, Ryan, that over the years you've had to, I don't know, like emotionally brace yourself more, like you've actually had to somehow get over certain things, or were you basically okay with it from the start?
Pretty much from the start. I realized I looked at it from a logistical side of everything. It's actually kind of funny because a lot of times I joke around like I feel like I work for the mafia, like I'm like I'm Winston fucking Wolf, you know,
dropping flowers.
I mean, no, we'll just be okay. There's a dead body in this house that we have to remove. Okay, he's 290 pounds and he's up two flights of stairs and there's no way to get the gurney inside.
So,
how am I going to do this? So it just became like logistical.
So it sounds like Jason Statham's the transporter versus
have been a piano mover.
Or was it the movie Eastern Promises? Not, is it Eastern Promises with Viggo Mortensen? Then there's like the beginning scene, he's cutting up a body.
You know, I've never actually seen that movie.
excuse me. I love Eastern Promises. The only scene I don't like is the ending because I'm just not a big fan of nudity in general in movies. And this has
Don't fucking spoil it. I just said I haven't seen it.
Well, that's the only thing I'm warning you about is the nudity. But I love the movie. My favorite part about it is the tattoos. My favorite story, and I've told it a couple of times, is Viggo was wearing his full outfit, the tattoos, or regalia, and everything apparently, and went to lunch in a restaurant in the Russian side of London. And apparently as soon as he entered the building, it was quiet. Like people were legitimately scared of him because of the tattoos he had. And he said after that, he made certain that he would never go out again with all the tattoos because how much it scared everybody. You got to see it, dude. I'd say that's one of my top 20 movies.
Yeah, I've seen it up there for a long time. It's just one of those that just happened to slip through the cracks.
And I think we did it for
real. Let me ask you guys something. What do you think about basically your childhood being sold back to you, you know, 20 years after it happened? Like the big nostalgia craze for your uplift.
No, I can't speak for James. It doesn't really bother me all that much, with some caveats. I'd love to buy most of the cartoons that I grew up on. And that being said, I grew up in a giant swath of cartoons, anywhere between probably the early 50s, 40s to, you know, 80s and 90s. As long as it wasn't edited. For example, Johnny Quest. There's a couple of there's an episode where he calls people savages, and like the newer releases, I think they're edited out. As long as they treat it with respect and don't view it from like modern sensibilities, then I'm totally for it. However, if it's edited and bastardized, I don't like that. I have issues with it.
Yeah, I don't like revisionist history. in that regard.
I don't like
it. But the reason I ask is I bought a fucking N64 the other day.
Oh, that's awesome. Did it come with the expansion cartridge?
No, I've got to get the expansion pack. See, that's the thing is when I started doing this, I was just on Amazon, just going fucking crazy. I realized how many accessories there were to that shit. The expansion packs, the rumble packs, the memory packs. I've got to get all that shit. First couple of games I bought was Mario 64. That was actually the impetus because I never actually finished that game and it always bugged me.
Did you get GoldenEye? Did you get GoldenEye?
Oh, of course I'm going to get GoldenEye, but I'm also getting like Wave Race, Excite Bike, Donkey Kong Country, Diddy Kong Racing, you know, all that shit, Mario Party. I remembered all these games because I was sitting there trying to think of a bunch of shit that me and my girlfriend can play together. Because nowadays, there's no such thing as a couch co-op anymore. You know what I mean? Nothing I can sit next to my buddy and play a split-screen thing with.
That was the one thing that really pissed me off about all the latest versions of Halo. Is James and I, no matter how old we are, whenever a new Halo game came out, we always set a couple of days aside so we could play co-op together. Because James and I together are incredibly vicious. Because we've been playing so long together. And the latest Halo, you had to have, like, there was no split screen. And that, to me, that legitimately broke my heart. Is because it's part of my favorite thing to do in life is the communal experience of things, whether it's watching movies with my family, whether I'm playing video games. Matter of fact, total sidebar, but one of the things I really miss growing up is on Sundays, they had the Wonderful World of Disney. I loved that. I loved that so much. There's a guy, and I'm really sorry, I wish I knew who it was, but he made this amazing Wonderful World of Disney intro, and it's completely, he uses Walt Disney's voice and it modernized it. And I have that on a playlist on my Plex server. So like on Sunday nights, I'm going to play it no matter what I'm watching. And since Disney owns pretty much all of my favorite movies at this point, it still fits. Star Wars, Aliens. By the way, I just thought about it. Guess who could be a princess now? The Alien Queen. Am I wrong?
No. Yeah, she totally should be.
Would it have to be like the young female Xenomorph?
So she'll be a villain then. Come on, she can be with Angelina Jolie's character.
She's like Cersei.
So Ripley can be a hero. Ripley can be a princess now. Oh,
I'm down with that.
Second sidebar. I was reading about the episode, about the ending of Aliens when... Ripley's basically in her underwear. How that was always a favorite scene of everybody I know because it's really skimpy. So apparently the director made her wear underwear that was obviously too small. And apparently Sigourney Weaver actually really disliked that because it sexualized her character. And as soon as I read it, I'm like, I really agree. Because usually that stuff, it's not a big deal. I never pay attention to it anyways. But when I heard that, I'm like, you know, I actually agree with her. It makes...
Yeah, no kidding. It was a character that did not need to be sexualized in any way at all.
And the thing I loved away about that movie is the fact it ignored the one thing that all modern movies make a big deal out of. Oh, she's a woman. So she does something feminine or does something this or does something ridiculous. She's a female character, but doesn't play any of the stereotypical weaknesses that she's a woman, which is one of the reasons she's one of my all-time favorite main characters.
Yeah, well, it's simply never addressed. You know, it's just like, hey, here's the person who does this job.
Yeah, and I would say later on, like the second one, it plays a little bit more into it. So let me rephrase this. I think there's little bits and pieces of it where they play the fact that she's a woman when she's talking about her daughter, a few other things, kind of to basically.
Well, that's just playing the fact that she's a three-dimensional character, you know, not necessarily like leaning on the fact that like, hey, isn't this amazing that this woman can do all these things?
Well, yeah, that's kind of what I meant. To flesh out the character, they gave some things that she's not, you know, because otherwise it would just be a flat character. But once I heard that, I was just like,
but sexualizing the character, like you said, I mean, it did not do anything to move the story.
Yeah.
And you know, it was just like, hey, here's an excuse to get a chick in her underwear.
And I don't know. I know we reviewed Aliens cause I picked it. I don't remember if that was something that we commented on. It probably was.
I don't remember it being something that we talked about.
But now that I think about it, that actually pisses me off because it's almost the perfect character. It's the fact that, because the fact, like I said, she's a woman, but the strengths or weaknesses of said female character is not played up versus she's just a person doing a job who got fucked. That's why she's my favorite character.
I gotcha. You know, I like the fact that she was also in Cabin in the Woods as like kind of a cameo type thing. And she was even classy in that one. So it's like, now that I really think about it, she's not one of those female actresses that I've ever thought needed to be sexualized or had that
Galaxy Quest. Incentive. They did it, but they made fun of it.
You know, yeah, that's what I'm saying.
As yeah, far, Galaxy Quest made yeah. fun of it. That was fucking hilarious.
Yeah, that is pretty.
I, you know, and I totally agree. And this, so y'all out there may think this is weird that the fact a bunch of guys appreciate the fact that they're not flashing some woman's body. Yeah. I care.
Well, look, I don't need it gratuitous. I'm fine if it moves the story along.
Well, that's actually what I was going
to
say.
You know, like, if it has nothing to do with the character, you know, I mean, some characters are very sexual characters, you know, and so, hey, fine. You know, I would almost expect there to be some gratuitousness going on, but for something like Ripley, you know, just the last thing that I'm thinking about yeah. is like, oh, I wonder what she looks like in her underwear.
See, I was actually going to say that, and it's actually, it's been my stand since I was a little kid, is the fact that nudity doesn't bother me in a story as long as there's a purpose for it. For example, if in a horror movie, the woman's taking a shower and she's topless. Okay, she would be obviously naked because she just either was in the shower or got out of the shower. There's a reason for it.
Yeah, or even the classic teenage trope, which Cabin in the Woods made fun of all the time. You know, I mean, that the teenagers go to the secluded place and they're all going to have a bunch of fun and shit like that. I'd expect there to be some kind of National Lampoon-style nudity.
Yeah.
You know, in those kinds of moments, you know.
So the one woman that a lot of guys really enjoyed the fact that she was really skimpy. I don't think there was ever really nudity is Jamie Lee Curtis in Halloween. Like, I never found her attractive or her character attractive, but there was a lot of guys that were really excited about the fact that she was in her underwear in one of the scenes. And I'm like, you know, that I didn't even remember that part. So it's not even memorable to me. And then, so,
but
the only one that I could think of where I was kind of like, that she's not too bad is True Lies. That's it. That's the only movie where I've ever been like, all right, she ain't bad.
And one of the reasons I actually liked that scene, because it made sense within the movie, yeah. within that universe.
Yeah,
as whack
yeah.
as it was.
That was a great strip piece, too,
it
man.
Was.
Fucking
it
John
really
Hyatt
was.
On the score. What was that, Alone in the Dark?
Yeah,
that was a great tune for that.
Because within that universe, what she was doing, as wacky as it is to us, it made sense.
Yeah.
Within, and that to me is a movie reviewer, as a movie lover, that to me is the most important. The 80s, a lot of 80s movies, especially comedies, usually piss me off because it's the most gratuitous boob shots in this shot. And even though it's a comedy...
Like Revenge of the Nerds.
Yes. Well, actually, no, Revenge of the Nerds, it actually makes sense.
Candles.
There you go.
Revenge of the Nerds, that you... you know,
yeah,
like,
the one scene I remember from 16 Candles, because I saw it when I was a kid, was literally just full frame boobs. Just like, hey guys, boobs.
Oh.
And then cut to the rest of the locker room scene. It was just like I think they showed this scene to show boobs.
Yep.
I'm starting to get that impression.
Yeah. So
fucking John Hughes, man, was a big fan of the pointless nudity.
Have you guys seen Just One of the Guys?
No.
Which, you know what, to be fair, a 13-year-old Ryan, thank you.
So Just One of the Guys is basically, it's a trope of a female reporter wanting to know what it's like being a guy, and this takes place within a high school universe. Mm. So she pretends to be a guy. And at the end of the movie, spoiler alert, but it's a 30-year-old movie, so fuck off, is she
flashed
Just One of the Guys. I've
heard of the movie. I haven't seen it.
And at the end of the movie, she rips off her shirt. It's like a button down shirt. She rips it open. And the guy's comment is, what do you get for having boobs? Or, you know, like, how dare you have breasts? And I think, you know, so that was another movie, one that I, as a kid, remember thinking it was gratuitous, but it made sense within the story, even though I thought it was ridiculous.
Yeah.
But hell, even anime, 80s anime was pretty much, no, this
nudity
was
nudity and panty anime
and cussing, lots of like shit, damn motherfucker, stuff like that. It's just like, why so much cussing? This is gratuitous.
So now you got me thinking, cause I know that there's an actual name for like the panty anime. Like there's an actual category that it's in. Can't remember what it's called though. So I remember it was one of the anime that I kind of liked, but it just kept on doing all that stuff. And I'm just like, it was Kitty Grade, because I liked Kitty Grade. I liked the story and everything about it. But then I was like, looked it up, and I'm like, why is there so much of this?
Oh, what was it? There's another one that was like Zombie High School or Zombie something. That High School of the Dead. And there's another one. Like the story was interesting enough, but these panty shots and moaning happened so much I actually couldn't watch it, because it's like come on, the story's interesting.
Shit, the original Dragon Ball, for fuck's sake.
Oh my, the unedited version is would have never been aired. Yeah,
the amount of over sexualization they had for Bulma was ridiculous.
So the actual genre, it took me a little while to find it because it's not one that pops right up, is Pantsu anime is a panty, garter belt, and something else style anime where it shows a lot of those things. And I'm like,
so it's like hentai in that way.
Yeah.
So it's off core. Like
Yuri. Yuri is the guy harem type anime where it's all the gay guys and stuff like that. And then there's like different categories. I didn't even know that stuff existed until I went and was like, why is there so much of this going on?
I ran into like the male harem anime. There was like, at one point in time, there was a description of something that sounded fun. Then I watched it. It's like, the story's not even interesting enough for me to watch. It was actually nothing. The fact it was a bunch of gay guys, the story just turned me off. But I've run into some stuff that made me kind of go, I didn't know this was a category.
Yeah. Like I didn't know it was a category, but I think I was still on it was before Netflix even started their streaming thing.
That's where I ran into a lot of the anime that I that's like, wow, not only am I surprised they have this, but wow.
Because I would do the whole thing like I used to do at Blockbuster. I'd go through and then read the description and be like, okay, you know, and that's how I found Kitty Grade. I'm like, why is there so much of this shit? And then I found out that it was in the Pantsu category.
I really liked Kitty Grade, but the only issue I had with Kitty Grade and whatever is the fact that how creepy it was, because these are, they looked almost like prepubescent little girls.
Well, the robot chick was. She was like supposed to be like designed after like I think it was like an 8 or 11 year old, somewhere around that age.
That was the issue I really had with it. Like I was fast forwarding through most of certain scenes because like I love the story.
Just too much of that. Yeah, the story was great. The battle scenes were really fun.
Actually, it was any of the scenes like you could tell it was coming up. So it was like fast forward.
Yeah.
Because honestly, nudity's never been my particular, like, you know, thing that I got hung up on. And it really is to me, like I've said a dozen times in this episode, there has to be a logical reason for it.
Yeah.
Which is one of the reasons.
Not me. I'd rather see everybody in the world naked.
Boobs.
Really? You want to see James nude?
Everybody.
Wow.
Well, alrighty then.
That just added something interesting to your friendship.
Apparently. I mean, I think he's soliciting pictures now.
Well, the best thing about the internet is you never know what he's going to get.
Jeez, it's true.
Yeah.
Because he hasn't seen you in quite a while. You know, talk about Paul Bearer. So you guys we have roughly done an hour. Do you guys have anything else to talk before we round this episode out?
No, off the top of my head.
So for the California Pariah, for the Fat Man, and Ryan, Don't Ask, Don't Tell, Preston, as always, thank you for listening.
Goodbye.